It is the first Sunday of the month. I cannot believe it. How fast has this year gone by? It's Doc Talk, and we're talking documentaries. And today, I'm going to play one of my favorite documentaries, The Thin Blue Line, Errol Morris, made in 1988. I can't even believe that. Like, I think he shot on film. In fact, I know he shot on film. And one of the best, still holds up as one of the best documentaries, I think, ever made. And for those of you who want to see the whole thing, it is on Netflix streaming. You don't have to get the DVD. No, you don't have to do that. It's just streaming. So, I mean, I just love Errol Morris. I go back to him over and over, partially because I think most of his documentaries are ultimately about truth itself. That's the main subject. And whatever subjects he's doing, doesn't matter. It's all about finding the truth, piecing it together, putting it in context, and helping us understand how we do that and how we shape the truth. And truth is, as we all know, a big subject today. It's something that we are all examining and forced to examine, essentially, and fight for and understand and evaluate in our own personal lives, and also politically, and how that impacts us every single day. We kind of can't get away from this whole thing. So I'm going to be doing something I never do, which is like trying to do this whole social media live streaming sort of thing today. For those of you who are listening in, I don't know if you are. Maybe you are, maybe you're not. But I'm going to try to incorporate that into the show today and see what happens, because it's these like little snaps that we get, and moments, and what do those really add up to? I don't know. And like I said, Morris is the master, and he's going to piece this stuff together with the amazing soundtrack of Philip Glass. What an incredible match. And that bed that he provides, that music bed that he provides, just puts you in this kind of state. The state of this kind of slow burn of what is going to happen next. And you kind of are lulled into believing that you are hearing the truth in a certain way. Like, yeah, I'm hearing this story and it's all coming together. And then you're like, wait a minute, something just went off the rails there. And I'm not sure at what point it did. So that's what's so great about, I think, this film. And you're trying to like piece it together as you're being told this story, and these facts are coming up, and this music is playing, and it's like keeps going and going and going in this kind of slow Philip Glass build. So it's great. Without further ado, I'm gonna start playing some of it. And it's funny, like, I don't know, this is just like a total sidebar, but I have a thing about like the logos at the top of films, like their little, like, you know, those animations that they all do, all the companies, whatever. And I just, they're never good. They're just never good. I mean, maybe like 20th Century Fox, that was it. Like, that was awesome. Great. That was done. Like, did it. The only other one I like is the one at the top of this film, which is IFC Films, which is like got this great little sound and like the flickering of the like the light coming through the projector. But all the rest, just don't try. Just put your name up there. It's fine. We don't need like bells and whistles. Like, honestly, seriously. Anyway, that's just like a weird sidebar, a little pet peeve I have. But okay, so I'm gonna play Errol Morris's Thin Blue Line. So get ready, y'all. Hope this works. Here we go.
Thank you. jobs. You know, all these people are supposedly out of work. I'm not in town a half a day and I've got a job. It just, everything clicked. It's as if I was meant to be here. Picked me up December 21st. They took me upstairs, what floor, I don't know, but they put me in a little room. That's where he walked out. He had a confession there he wanted me to sign. He said that I would sign. Didn't give a damn what I said. I would sign this piece of paper he's got. I told him I couldn't. You know, I don't know what the hell you people expect of me, but there's no way I could sign that. He left. He came back in 10 minutes and threw a pistol on the table. Asked me to look at it, which I
kill me. Or forget the signature. I guess he forgot the signature because he put his pistol up. He took the pistol on the table, put it up, and stormed out. I had what I call a casual, friendly conversation with him to start with, to try to size him up, to see what he liked and what he didn't like. And I found almost immediately that he didn't have very much conscience, that what anything he had done, it never really bothered him. He had done other things that he told me about that didn't seem to bother him in the least.
He showed no expression whatsoever. It's just like that he's sitting here talking about the color of this wall or shooting of the police officer. He showed no reaction to any of the questions.
He, of course, almost overacted his innocence. He protested that he hadn't done anything and couldn't imagine why we were bringing him in. He didn't fight or he didn't resist. He just protested his innocence.
I, of course, told them what happened that Saturday, that I had met this kid. I kept telling them the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. They didn't really believe me. Never once was I allowed a phone call. Never once was an attorney there. I don't know how long this had been. I know I had smoked two packs of cigarettes and had been out for a long time.
Didn't take his ticket book out of the car. He left it in the car on the front seat, which indicates that he was not going to write a ticket. What he was probably going to do is to tell him to turn on the headlights.
He didn't know that the car was stolen. I think there's a very good chance that he was going to check the driver's license and tell him to turn on his headlights and let the guy be on his way.
Officer Wood's wife had purchased him a bulletproof vest and had it under the Christmas tree, or had it stored away to give to him at Christmas time.
His partner was one of the first female police officers that was assigned to patrol. They were out of the Northwest Station, just patrol officers following the clock, working the graveyard shift and everything. They had been into a fast food restaurant and she had a mobbed. This car came by, just two dudes in it, with no lights. The really wasn't a serious problem, but he just pulled out, turned his lights on, and stopped him just to warn the man that his lights were off.
Sense.